I think Kevin Rudd was right about at least one thing, which was that he said that, I think he said something to the effect that climate change, the challenge of climate change, is the single most important issue, social, economic, political and moral issue of this century. And I believe that's the case. I believe it's something that should be addressed in an apolitical, bipartisan way, because it is far more important than anything that any of us will ever do in our lifetime. The significance of it transcends our lifetime and probably several generations beyond our lifetime. And those who are playing games on the hill up here these days are really squandering what is a very important opportunity to get this right. It is an issue on which I've spent a lot of time in the last 10 or 15 years trying to be heard, particularly in the business community. I see it as an enormous opportunity rather than a negative. And I've tried to prove that through various organisations, which I'll mention in a moment. I think one of the basic problems you have in politics with an issue like this is that people can't look out the window and touch it and feel it. So it's easy for them to be misled and misdirected and frightened, particularly frightened, about what is happening and the arguments that are being put forward. It's easy to be sceptical. It's easy to deny. I think, though, they should stop and think that if the great bulk of scientists, some 90-odd, 95, 97% of climate scientists actually agree that this is a problem, that it's human-related, and that we're near a tipping point, then I think they should actually pay attention to that simple fact, mostly because scientists basically don't ever agree. I mean, the whole nature of science is that you are competitive. You contest each other's theories. You contest each other's results. You can contest each other's empirical evidence. But here we have an issue on which the great bulk of scientists actually all agree. Climate scientists agree. So that, more than any other single fact, I think should convince people that this is an argument worth listening to and trying to do something about. I'm one who believes that my interpretation of the science is that we are at or near a tipping point, that internationally. I think when I look at that from Australia's point of view, given the level of our emissions per capita, we should be looking at a target for the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by about 30 to 40% in my mind by 2020, off a 1990 base, not a 2000 base, and maybe 90% plus by 2050. And secondly, I'd say this is not something that you can back-end load. You can't wait to 2049, run out the door and figure it, you're going to fix it. You've actually got to start up front and front-end load it and start making the changes, the transition to a low-carbon society, which are going to take some time, some effort, some adjustment, and consistency of policy we haven't seen in this country for decades, if ever. Now, I mentioned that I've been involved in this issue for quite some time. And back at the end of the 90s, we formed a group called the National Business Leaders Forum on Sustainable Development. The idea was to try and educate the business community about the significance of climate change as a problem, as a challenge, as a risk, but also as an opportunity for business to actually go out and make a quid. And the interesting thing is, for the first 5 or 6 years of that time, we actually talked among ourselves. Our conferences were very poorly attended. About 6 years ago, we brought Al Gore to Australia, trying to elevate the significance of the debate. He was dismissed at the time as a failed politician and an entertainer. He actually ended up winning, I think, an Academy Award for his entertainment. We encouraged him on the basis of the speech that he gave to put out what is an inconvenient truth. And as things happened, perhaps never as well planned as you'd like, the coincidence of that, the Stern Report and other things actually have raised the issue to some great significance internationally. And we are having serious international discussions, even though Copenhagen was a disappointment. Our conferences are now held in Parliament House. We're invited to Parliament House. They were oversold every year. In that period, I got particularly frustrated as an individual that the business community would only see it as a negative. They would listen to the big polluters. They wouldn't listen to the rest of us that might suggest that there are business opportunities that would flow from this. And I think if we have an adequate economic and business response to this challenge, we will develop a whole range of new industries. We'll have something of a technological revolution, which will bring with it many opportunities, many jobs, many increases in our standard of living. If we resist it, we lose those opportunities, we miss it. Okay, there'll be adjustment problems, there'll be shifts from one industry to another, and so on. But these are not insurmountable difficulties. Anyway, out of my frustration, I got involved in a series of businesses to try and prove the point. Started a business that recycled household garbage, extracted the methane gas from the garbage, turned it into power, ran the plant, sold the plant into the grid. We could make money out of recycling household garbage and avoiding what is a barbaric practice, probably the most barbaric environmental practice, tipping, landfilling our putrescible waste. Then I went into an energy-efficient light bulb business, a biofuels business. We built the largest biodiesel plant in the world in Singapore. Green data centres. At every case, and I'm not singing my own song, I'm just saying I can prove the point that there are enormous opportunities in a business sense to recognise that while it's a challenge, it is also an opportunity. And I think change itself always brings with it the opportunity. So I now look at where we are in the political debate, and I'm frustrated beyond belief. We've lost a lot of ground from where we were when Kevin Rudd made that statement in the early stages of his prime ministership. And indeed, the way it's going to be very hard to turn this issue around with this generation of parliamentarians. When you give them a free book, they'll be very sceptical naturally because it's free, apart from anything else. But when I look at where we are, I cannot believe how badly this issue is being handled. Before the last election, I suggested that we set up a multi-party committee and get each of the main players, the government, the opposition, and the Greens, involved in an attempt to be bipartisan and see whether, in fact, it would be possible to put a price on carbon and how best to do it. Of course, my old staff member, Tony Abbott, decided not to participate in that process, and so it's become something of a farce, where the government has actually announced its commitment to put a price on carbon, but it's not going to give us the detail of that until July. It's not going to give us the legislation until September. And so that's a free kick for my old mate Tony Abbott every single day. And he never misses an opportunity. He's one of the most negative people I've ever met. And he's very good at it, and he's going to keep at it, and he's going to keep doing it, and the government's going to find it very difficult to turn this debate around. And that frustrates me more than anything else. I mean, if you were looking at a marketing campaign, and I'm not good at marketing campaigns, I lost an election on one, but if you look at this marketing campaign, why on earth did they do it that way? Why on earth didn't they work through the detail of an emissions trading system and announce it and implement it in an effective way? They'd had one trial. I think a tragedy of Rudd was that he had the opportunity in February of last year to go to a double dissolution on the basis on the basis of a double dissolution, and he didn't take it. I think he would have increased his majority to still be Prime Minister. Perhaps not for long, but he would still be Prime Minister. So against that background, I think you guys have done a tremendous job in drawing attention to the significance of the deniers. Skeptics, yes, naturally all scientists are skeptics, but the deniers are the ones that are causing the problem. They get more coverage, more airplay, heavily funded, of course, by the big polluters, as you've said. This sort of contribution to the debate, I think, is very significant.